This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Boker Tov. So this is the week in the year when we read the Torah portion of Chayei Sarah, the life of Sarah. And of course, what's quite famous and very, very popular about this particular portion is, of course, the mention of Hebron and Kiryat Arba and the fact that Avram bought a plot to bury Sarah in the form of the cave of the patriarchs, Ma'arat HaMachpelah, mentioned in this week's Torah portion. And, of course, people like to go down to Hebron for Shabbat in order to kind of mark the occasion. The thing that I'm just going to put out there, because I know that your listeners like to have things put out there from time to time, is that this is something which is used by us to lay claim to ownership of Hebron, Kiryat Arba, and of course, particularly the Cave of the Patriarchs. Now, you and I know that all of these events took place a few months ago. It's not just from recent history. So to what extent do we think we really have the right to lay claim to that? I mean, it does talk about the fact that money was paid and the amount was even mentioned. There was an agent involved. So it seems to have been a legitimate transaction in the day. But is that enough of a link for us to say, hey, that is Jewish property bought legitimately, money handed over, all done legally, registered in the lands authority records, whatever had to be done in the day? Is that something that we can still use today to say that's ours and we lay claim to it and nobody has the right to grab it from us? Just something that I'm putting out there as a sort of controversial statement, because I know that that is a claim that many people make.
Very, very important question, and I'd love your thoughts on it. 3451906189510119. What do you think about that? Do you think it's a legal thing, or do you think just maybe it indicates a historic connection more than it does anything else? Anthony, you were saying?
Yeah. Just before we go on, just another quick story. We spoke a few months ago about the Artemis mission to the moon and this anti-radiation suit that had been developed by an Israeli company. And what was very fascinating about this mission was the two dummies that had been created to go on the mission, one with the anti-radiation suit, a dummy called Zohar, and a dummy without an anti-radiation suit alongside it called Helga. One a German dummy, one an Israeli dummy, both apparently in the female form. I'm not going to go there right now. I guess their pronouns are female. But Zohar actually had an Israeli passport issued for her. And I have seen a picture of it, even with a picture. And a date of birth, the 1st of January 2000 for Zohar. And Zohar was launched into space finally yesterday on the Artemis mission. So that was after months and years of delays, finally launched yesterday from the US. There will be the Artemis capsule, the Orion capsule from this Artemis mission will orbit the moon on a few times. The anti-radiation suit will be tested out. We expect the Orion capsule to land back on Earth sometime next month. So Zohar finally has made it into space alongside her German friend Helga, who are apparently right next to each other in the Orion capsule right now, heading towards orbit of the moon.
Really, really amazing. The Likud is reported to have cancelled talks with the religious party. So there was definitely a lot of upheaval yesterday. What happened?
So, well, I did say that putting the coalition together wasn't going to be simple, even though before the election, we really had the impression that it was all stitched up, that everybody was lined up, everybody knew what they had to do, support this way, support that way. It was going to be an obvious coalition. When the results came out, it was clear that the coalition had 64 seats. There didn't seem to be any possible way that this was going to fall apart. And then Israeli politics intervened. And I'm not exactly sure whether this is a fatal problem that could potentially scupper the possibility of a coalition being put together. But there's definitely an issue going down between the Likud and the religious partners that form the right-wing coalition that we thought was going to take power. It seems as if, though, a lot of the disagreements still center around who will be the Minister of Finance and who will be the Minister of Defense. We understand that Aryeh Deri and Bezalel Smotrich are still both fighting very, very hard indeed. Smotrich wanting to get the defense ministry, Deri the finance ministry. Apparently there are Likud names that the prime minister-elect would like to put forward rather than give those important jobs to those two individuals who we've already mentioned may or may not be well suited to take those two jobs, but they feel that the jobs are, of course, senior enough to give them the standing that they feel they deserve as part of this coalition, which they feel that they've given a lot of benefit to, that they've provided a huge amount of support to, and in return, they feel that they deserve those senior jobs. So it seems like there's a bit of a standoff, and as I've read in some reports, there was even a cancellation of talks, and potentially even a cancellation, or a cancellation which goes further than that, potentially a cancellation of discussions at all with the potential to form a government. And there are some reports that have suggested that the Likud have reached out to Yair Lapid, to Benny Gantz, and to Gideon Saar with the possibility of forming a government with those parties who were in the coalition of the outgoing government right now, which seemed inconceivable. Absolutely. A few weeks ago when we went to the election. But there are reports behind the scenes suggesting that there might be some secret talks going on behind the scenes. One could suggest that it's a little bit of brinkmanship in order to try and pull the religious parties into line by the Likud saying, look, we do have alternatives. You guys are not the only solution. You are not the only show in town. There is another show that we could potentially pursue. So if you want to be the ruling show, then you're going to have to step down off your pedestal a little bit, perhaps try and temper your expectations and be willing to accept a slightly lower position rather than be so insistent that you want a position which is not going to come your way, and you claim brinkmanship, because obviously that's the nature of Israeli politics, is the brinkmanship, the threat that we're not going to come into the coalition if we don't get that job. There is a concern that this is going to be such a huge government. Some have even said 2 Knesset members to each minister in government. So if we've got 64 Knesset members, it means that the government is going to be made up of more than 30 ministers. And besides being unwieldy and potentially unmanageable, it's also massively expensive, because every minister is entitled to an office and a car and a driver and a certain standing and certain rights that come to ministers of government. And so, yeah, there is clearly not a lot of peace going down at the moment. And in addition to that, the religious Zionist party, which was made up of 3 constituent parts, has now already been split out, because the single Knesset member representing the Noam faction has advised that they would like to be split away, that he would like to be split away from the religious Zionist party that they'd signed up to. And Noam, the Noam representative, wants to sit separately in the Knesset and not be part of the religious Zionist faction that had been put together before the election. That's an interesting little development as well, because it seems pretty clear to all of us that that individual would never have had a Knesset seat if he'd run on his own. If Noam had run as a separate party, they would never have passed the threshold and they would never have gained that Knesset seat. Now that they've managed to gain the seat, they're kind of seem to be trying to take the best of all worlds and trying to separate themselves. So a lot of interesting developments within the coalition discussions. Another interesting development is the fact that the US government has made fairly clear that in the event that Bezalel Smotrich is a member of the government, that the US government as a policy will ensure that its representatives have nothing to do with him, will not meet with him, will not have anything to do with him directly. If he's the Minister of Defense, that's a potential problematic outcome for the State of Israel, given that the Minister of Defense needs to have a certain close relationship with his US counterparts. So that is already potentially a problem which the Prime Minister-elect needs to take care of and need to think about how he will deal with that. So lots and lots of interesting challenges going on within the coalition discussions. Let's see what happens next week, if there's anything new on that.
Yeah, it's fascinating, because is there a chance that the whole coalition will shift, or are people, is the view that this is probably just bluffing, maybe?
I think there's a lot of bluff involved. I think that Netanyahu needs to show his coalition partners that they are not the only show in town, that if they don't toe the line to some degree, he has to assert his authority as well. He can't allow them to be calling every single shot in this discussion. So he needs somehow to show them that he has an alternative. And I think that that's potentially why there are these reports that he's reached out to Lapid, to Gantz, and to Saar. Whether he's actually done so is unclear, but at least there are reports circulating that he's done so. And I wouldn't put it past him. I think it's quite conceivable that he could do that. But at the moment, I would suggest that that approach is probably just to show the others that they are not the only ones who could potentially form this government.
Yeah, and not the only show in town, as you said. I think that's really, really very, very interesting, and I don't think anyone really saw it going in this direction. But we will continue watching the story. An Israeli-owned ship was attacked by Iran near Oman. This is also a very interesting one.
Well, it is an interesting story, because some people are suggesting that this is an attempt to somehow draw attention away from the events that we discussed in Georgia, where this Israeli businessman apparently was in the crosshairs of an Iranian-backed gang, and that all unraveled. And now we understand that the Pacific Zircon, which is a ship owned by, I think, a Singaporean company, which ultimately has strong links back to Israeli businessman Idan Ofer. Some are saying he has a small ownership. Some are saying it is owned by him. I'm not exactly sure of what the ownership structure is, but Idan Ofer is clearly somebody who's involved in the shipping industry, and there is no doubt at all that he has some sort of a link to this ship, the Pacific Zircon, which was carrying oil in the Gulf of Arabia, apparently not far from Oman, just off the coast of Oman, when it was struck by a bomb-carrying drone. And even though nobody has claimed responsibility for this drone and for the attack on the Pacific Zircon, it seems as if, though, the links of the drone have been traced back to Iran. Fortunately, the Pacific Zircon was not severely damaged and has managed to continue on its way to wherever it was going. Apparently, no oil is leaking from the ship. None of the oil tanks have been damaged either. So it seems to have been a relatively isolated incident. No injuries, according to the reports that I've read, to crew on board the ship. So all relatively benign, even though the attack clearly took place and it seems to have been carried out by Iran. And it sort of links me to a slightly different but related story, which has suggested that the drones that have been used by Russia, which were supplied by Iran, apparently contain component parts, many of which come from the United States, and even one component part, which apparently emanates from Israel. In a drone that has been developed and produced by Iran, that has been given to Russia or sold to Russia for use against Ukraine, now it transpires that it's got a whole bunch of component parts which are U.S. manufactured, U.S. delivered, and even an Israeli ultra nighttime lens, a lens which can has visibility at night, and which apparently comes from an Israeli manufacturer. And it kind of does link quite interestingly into the Israeli government policy about Israeli goods and services, particularly defense-sensitive products, which might be sold abroad and which might then get into the wrong hands and which could then potentially be used back against Israel.
That's clearly just happened.
Which is kind of, I mean, in this particular case, it's determined that this lens was not on the Defense Ministry's sensitive products list and therefore wasn't subject to the usual laws that applies to these things. But nevertheless, look what's happened. It seems to have got into the wrong hands, and off it goes to Iran, and they use it against Ukraine. Very fascinating indeed.
Israel football fans will be traveling to Qatar for the World Cup. So it wasn't a given. This wasn't a simple result, was it?
Not a simple result, because Qatar, of course, is not one of the countries that has signed up to the Abraham Accords. No diplomatic relations currently between Israel and Qatar. And nonetheless, of course, FIFA have insisted that the World Cup is not about politics, and therefore Qatar is not entitled to exercise this lack of diplomatic relations as an excuse not to allow Israeli fans. We understand that something like 3,000 Israeli fans will be in Qatar at some point or another to watch football games, many of them traveling on non-Israeli passports. So that in itself presents a certain challenge, because Qatar said anybody who enters Qatar on a non-Israeli passport will not be given Israeli diplomatic protection or diplomatic rights in the event that something goes wrong. They will be referred to the embassy of the passport upon which they have traveled to Qatar. Also, it's been published that the Israeli government has said they will allow flights directly from Israel to Qatar for the duration of the Football World Cup to allow fans to travel backwards and forwards. No airline has come forward to say, hey, we want to be the ones to travel to put the planes on to travel to Qatar from Israel. So it seems as if most Israeli fans will need to travel from here to Cyprus. There will be a stop in Cyprus, which will kind of be a diplomatic stop. I don't think anybody even gets off, and I'm not even sure that the plane even lands there, but it's supposedly in Cyprus, and then from there moves on to Qatar. Of course, the plane will land in Cyprus, I'm being facetious, but then will travel on to Qatar as a Cypriot flight in order to try and sort of rebadge the flight. But certainly a certain level of recognition of the rights of Israelis to travel to Qatar, even though the Qatari government in Doha has made clear that this does not mean normalization of relations at all. On the contrary, we are not diplomatically connected to Israel, but come and watch the football anyway.
Unreal. Anthony Rach, thank you as always. Wishing you a fantastic weekend. A Shabbat Shalom, and of course, we'll catch you on Monday morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.